You're listening to CivCast on the Kyle Dempster Studios Network. Support us on Patreon at patreon.com/CivCast. Hello, everyone, and welcome back to a new episode of CivCast. My name is Kyle, and today I am joined by my co-host, Dan. And a little someone you might know if you've been listening to our last two episodes, Valter. Hi, Valter. Welcome to the show. Guess who's a new co-host? You.
Hooray! I made it.
You did. Dan, how's your day going?
My day's going all right, man. It's a sunny day out for me, and I'm stoked that we've got Valter on board permanently now. That's good because his technical expertise far outranks mine, so I defer to him completely.
It's funny because you and I came together like at the exact same time on that. Valter, I don't think I even included this, but Dan and I were talking on Facebook Messenger, and he said something along the lines of, you know, we should invite Valter on the show full time. And I was thinking the exact same thing. I'd been mulling that over in my mind the whole week. So it was a perfect confluence of everything there. And you've given us so much content every time you come on the show. We have great conversations. So thank you for joining us as a full-time co-host. We have a lot to talk about, guys. This was not a thin week when it comes to Civ stuff. We got a new DLC. We got Australia to play, who's, in my opinion, pretty awesome. And on top of that, the Australian Summer DLC, the Australian Summer Update, which I find to be a very confusing name. Did anyone else get tripped up on this? I didn't know that it was Australian Summer in full when I first read it. I thought they were just saying Summer Update. Am I the only one?
Yeah, I had the same thing, and I saw people complain about it on Reddit as well. Like, wait, they're going to wait until summer?
Uh-huh.
We're a bunch of Northern Hemisphere-centric jerks is what we are. It's summer in Australia right now, boys. That's what they mean. And it's a large market. Australia is a large Civ market.
More power to them. More Australian listeners. Please, ship CivCast there. You can find it in your local grocery store. No, I was very confused. I swear I saw a couple posts where they didn't actually include the word Australian, and it just said summer update. It is probably on Twitter where people were abbreviating, or, you know, maybe I was just reading too quickly, but I was so confused. I thought we were waiting till summer, and then it was like, no, this is 4 days away or something like that. So, hey, it is what it is.
I'm happy we don't have to wait till summer because we have the update now and the deal.
Now, I wanted to mention this, everyone out there listening. We are having some technical troubles today. Poor Valter here at his first time as full co-host. We're having some dropouts with him. We may or may not have any with Dan. We've been having a pretty clear connection, but Discord's just not on our team today. They're working against us a bit. So please bear with us. We're going to do what we can to get it fixed, but it's one of those things that's truly out of our control. Write to the internet itself and ask it, beg it to be kinder to us next week.
Write to Al Gore.
There you go.
Mr. Gore, fix your invention.
Oh, boy. I know we're going to keep politics out of this, but that's all I'm going to say, actually, is oh, boy. So if you're curious what oh, boy means, Google it. But Dan, I'll just tease it like that. I mean, it's a scary world.
Interesting segue. World.
I was going to say, do you want to jump us right into the CivCast challenge, though, and tell us a bit more? We just recapped one, right? We're just finished.
We are finished. And woo! I wanted to thank everyone who took part in the CivCast challenge. Just a heads up for everyone who participated. I've kept track. There are four gentlemen who completed and were using the hashtag CivCast challenge on Twitter. For me, that's how I keep track. I type CivCast challenge into the search bar and I didn't find anything new. So if you're participating and I don't mention you, it's not because I hate you. It's because you didn't use the CivCast challenge hashtag. And I apologize for that. Yeah. So for those who are not aware, the CivCast challenge was kind of a specifically designed scenario to get you guys engaged in kind of like a pit battle between some early game domination focused civs. It involved playing the Aztecs in a game against five other enemies, Rome, Greece's Gorgo, Egypt, Scythia, and oh God, I'm blanking on the other one, Sumeria. It looks like we had four guys who finished it. Kyle, did you get a chance to check out some of the posts that we, or Kyle or Wouter? Now I have to remember to tack on that other name.
Please don't forget about our Wouter.
I'll try. Let's just ignore him. It's kind of like what's that called when you bring someone new on board? Your hazing ritual.
Yeah, sit in the corner and be quiet, Wouter.
Just ignore him with the dunce.
Sure, sure. I'll be just quiet here. when needed.
Yeah, exactly. But no, Kyle, did you get a chance to look at at Twitter and see what some of the folks submitted?
Oh yes, and I try my best to retweet them to give people some recognition. We had a lot, it felt like, this time around, and I think that might be a testament to making this now a monthly thing. At least it felt that way to me, and it felt like we got more quality posts out of people as well. Like before, I think people were rushing to get to the finish line. Now I think people are like, yeah, you know, I can take some more photos, upload some stuff. Was there anything you wanted to highlight out of that, Dan?
Well, I wanted to give all four guys who took the time to submit shout outs. I'll start with our friend Gustavo at Guz_Amato on Twitter. He submitted to us a couple pictures from his victory. He was victorious with the Aztecs on turn 258, which is 1735 AD. He submitted a picture of his map, and it looks like he had a lot of fun. It looks like a very kind of a lot of clustered cities. It looks like he conquered Egypt last, because I see the Aztecs with Thebes and Ra Kadet and all of these different Egyptian cities. But it does look like the last opposing civ on the board against him was Greece. And one little fun little note I see here from looking at his bars along the top, that he, by the end of the game, had stored almost 4,000 faith and was getting 190 faith per turn. So clearly kind of leaning into faith as a subordinate and beneficial added resource for him. So props, Gus, as usual. You come through, and bravo on the victory. Number two, a new entry. Well, actually, I'm going to save this guy for last because he actually did it the quickest.
Okay.
Another guy who's submitted before at ZoomWSU on Twitter. He's submitted, I think, a couple times. He sent us a few pictures of his victory. He was victorious on turn 172. And it looks like he did it by conquering Sumeria at the end there. I can see from this really cool zoomed in picture that he's got some Aztec cannons and infantry, it looks like. Is that an infantry? Yeah, it is an infantry icon. So he got pretty deep into it, it looks like, pretty deep into his military tech tree. And he ended up victorious on turn 172. He also had a lot of stored faith, and he was churning out 220 faith per turn. And at turn 172, that's really good. So,
wow.
Bravo to him. Rick TTTEN, he removed the underscores from his name.
He did.
That is his Twitter handle. Rick posted another fantastic kind of diary, basically, of his Civcast Challenge experience, where he posted some of the difficulties he was having. Specifically, it looked like surrounding what appeared to be a pincer movement from both Egypt and Gorgo, who appeared to be trying to crush him from both sides. This is the depth that Rick gets into, and this is why I love it. He gave his scenario a name. He called it Blood and Circuses. I apologize, Rick. and he went about highlighting through his story all of the different skirmishes he had, all of the different kind of military tactics that he underwent in order to really kind of cinch down on the enemy. And he posted actually a really, really fantastic image with his victory tweet, which was on turn 139. He posted some Aztec art alongside it, which is really cool. Kyle, I think that we should definitely retweet his, or at least maybe link his full story.
Ooh.
Because it is huge and it is beautiful. Because, I mean, he gives a detailed breakdown on his thoughts of the challenge in the first place, like whether or not he thought it was a good challenge. Because he said he never played the Aztecs before, but he was really hyped to try them out.
I got
yeah.
it. And so also, if you click on, can I give, yeah, him, sorry, a, give him a little shout out here and say, yeah. he mentioned to us that he was kind of sick at the beginning of the year and spent some time in the hospital. So wanted to send him some positive vibes because I had noticed, you know, it was much quieter. He hadn't sent us anything. So I was wondering what happened. So I hope everything is well on his end, you know, get better, man.
Absolutely. Get better, Rick, because we love these. I was sitting on my lunch break yesterday, actually, when I was taking a look at everyone that had completed this. And I actually looked through your entire notes here and the beautiful diary that you put together, and it's fantastic, and I encourage you to do it. He breaks down the policies he went with, as well as the reasons he went with it. And his logic is pretty complex and pretty sound. So we will retweet that. Bravo to Rick. He ends up victorious on turn 139. But he didn't win it, Kyle. The winner, and this is remarkable, this is a fellow who I don't think has tweeted at us before or given us any kind of feedback or anything like that. So he's a newbie, and I apologize if you have, and I just missed it. But at Cole Strader on Twitter, Cole posted two, you know, pretty straightforward pictures of, what did he post? He posted the domination victory graph with the total number of combat units, where it shows his number just absolutely spiking in the mid to late game. And Cole managed to gain a victory over five other civilizations in domination on turn 114.
Wow. Wow.
So, yeah, that's impressive.
That is.
Yes.
I think that's a good one.
That is a good one.
This is a good challenge, Dan, all around. I think you did a great job picking this one and setting it up. It seems like you really hit on some, you know, really tough challenges. You put this one together as one that everyone was strong in the early game. So impressive win there.
Yeah, very impressive for Cole. So bravo to you, Cole. Please keep submitting. Please keep, you know, and if you want to email us in and tell us a bit more about your experience, I'll share it next week. With regards to the Civcast Challenge, we're going to give you a one-week break here, but I do have the scenario in mind that we're going to start with next week. And hint, hint, it does involve our new Civ, Austria. Oh, God, there. See, I said Austria. I said before the show.
Dan, you're fired. Please exit stage left.
I'm sorry to my Australian friends.
So that's what...
Oh, I lost you, Valter. I'm sure it was a joke, but I lost.
No, it's okay, but...
Timing is wrong now, so never mind.
Ruined. You're fired, too. Welcome to the solo show. I will be talking for the next hour in monotone about Australia.
You mean Austria?
No, I don't. I don't mean Austria.
You mean New Zealand? No.
No, I really don't. So we actually have so much listener feedback. We got so much this week, which is amazing. And I think... I don't know. I think it's kind of a testament to it's definitely a repeating cycle. Like, people send us awesome stuff, so then we can share it and talk about it on the show, which is cool because it gives us tons to talk about. And then I think that the more we do that, the more people are feeling, you know, encouraged and emboldened to write in. So for everyone that did send things in this week via, we got a couple people that tweeted at us. I got a Twitter message. We got a couple submissions just via email and such. If we don't talk about it this week, just a heads up that we got it. But just like Dan is, you know, truncating that next challenge for next week, we're going to do the same with a lot of this feedback, just because we got so much pressing info to get to that we might try and sprinkle some in here or there. But if we didn't get to you, we'll get to you next week. Don't worry about it. So let's do this, guys. Are you cool diving in? And at the same time that we dive into this new stuff, let's meld this together. We usually talk about what we played in the last week. Maybe we talk about some of these patch notes and then see if any of us really had a chance to get in there and fiddle with them, because it seems like we did. But you guys, let's just jump into it. Let me read off some things of how this worked. So Australian Summer just came out, and this big announcement came with premium DLC, which is the Australia Civ, led by Prime Minister John Curtin, keeping in mind that is a $5 DLC, unless you already were a digital deluxe buyer, in which case you just got it. Keeping in mind, this is one of your four free DLC. Is that right, guys? I think you got four.
Yeah.
So we now only have one more free DLC coming our way, and then it'll be all out of pocket. So just keep an eye on that. In addition to that...
I've been hinting about that already, the extra DLC.
Oh.
Did you hear the hints?
No, tell.
Yeah, well, please tell.
The hints are that DLC, there will be not one Civ, but two.
Oh, ooh.
Love it.
Curious, does that mean we're going to have... So two DLC, I'm wondering if that means we get like another...
No. It's one DLC, two Civs in the DLC.
Yes, you corrected my statement there. My question is, does that mean we get a civilization with two different leaders again? Something like a Greece, I wonder? Like, is that... You know?
Well, the discussion have been going wild, and I think people mostly think that it's going to be some kind of Persia and Macedonia kind of DLC with a scenario which involves both of them as well.
That would be cool.
That would be very cool.
That would be cool.
Mm-hmm. So Macedonia, I think it would pretty naturally be Alexander the Great, right? I think that would be...
Yeah, that's probably going to be it. I mean, you could do Philippus II, but for Macedonia, it's probably Alexander, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, that would be cool.
Boy, yeah. We're entering into some interesting times here. Like, I felt like we had that post-holiday slow period for a minute, but they are full on in 2017 now. So that's very, very cool. And with all this announcement, we also have the Steam Workshop being turned on and modding tools. I think that we could spend a lot more time on that either towards the end of this episode or next week. And I'm really curious, if you are a modder out there or if you're friends with a modder, how about you have them write in and give us some info? I was trying to get some feedback on Reddit the other day, and it seems like some mixed reviews on those modding tools. Some people think they're a bit more confusing. One person said that they still prefer to mod it in Notepad, which isn't great. But, you know, I'm curious, once people get a real chance to dig into it, what they feel. What else? I actually used it the other day for the first time. I took my mods that I was getting through the Civ Fanatics forum and removed those guys. I needed to clean my file out anyway. But I just subscribed to a couple via the Steam Workshop. Seemed to work just fine. My friend and I got into a multiplayer game last night. He had enabled that feature in the menu that lets you automatically download the additional content. So if you jump into a multiplayer game that you don't have those mods, it'll pull them for you. And it seemed to work seamlessly. We had no mismatch errors or any of that sort of stuff. So, you know, first day, I can give it a green light.
Good. Good to hear it. I haven't had a chance to use the Steam Workshop yet, but I am really, really stoked to use it, especially when I start seeing some of these, map mods and UI mods and color mods that people come out with. That's totally my jam.
Yeah, and it's a little bit thin right now, as you can imagine. I think that the people that did like the more bulky or larger mods that had been through Civ Fanatics alone, I'm sure they have to maybe retweak a little bit and do some stuff like that to get it on there, I'm guessing. So it might take us about, I bet by the end of, I don't even know. I mean, it had three or so pages of mods as of last night. So my guess is by the end of March, it's going to be packed with stuff.
Nice.
Definitely.
Yeah. So that will be very, very exciting. But let's jump into these notes here and chat a little bit more in detail about what we got. So multiplayer. We can now do teams. Mixed feelings on this personally. So one of the biggest things we get from this is when a teammate finishes research on a tech or civic, their teammate receives a boost for that tech or civic. Have either of you done a multiplayer yet? I mean, we've only had like a day or two.
No.
Not there. The new system.
Got it. So I kind of felt a little meh with this. You got the boost, but it was almost like so much was happening, I couldn't keep up with it, especially because you're playing on an online speed, likely. So things are really, every turn, there's something happening. Like, there's tons of notifications to the point that I wasn't even reading what the other leaders were trying to tell me. I mean, they were probably border alerts and things like that, but... Yeah, it's a lot. It's interesting, though, and I really have some good faith for where that's going. I was curious, though, still you don't get to settle near each other on a map, which I always find a little bit strange with a Civ game, that it doesn't prioritize your location. So we started on two continents far away from one another, so we actually had like no interaction before we had to quit the game last night. Weird.
Huh.
I don't know how I feel.
That's quite strange.
Do you guys feel that maybe that should be something where you do have that option to settle together? Or, I don't know, any thoughts on this multiplayer announcement period?
Well, I really like it. I have played it with teams in Civ 5 quite a lot. I really like that. There, when you research pretty much together. So if you finish attack, the finished attack. But it's really strange. I would say that you should be together as a team, at least close to each other, so that you have more and send trade routes to each other if necessary. Those kinds of things.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, just reading the notes on it, I do kind of like how they rolled up some of these combined victory ideas, like the fact that, you know, if you're going for a team religious victory, for instance, then you only need to convert all civs to one of the religions. So you can kind of, one of your civs can be, you know, pumping out faith and pumping out the missionaries and the units required to go for the religious victory. And maybe the other civ is just hammering out military units to support. And I think that the same thing applies to the culture victory aspect too. So I think that, you know, I'm not a huge multiplayer player of this game anyway. I want to be, and I think that we will be when we start rolling out some CivCast Challenge multiplayer online games, Kyle. Ooh. Which we definitely have to do. I'm more of kind of a single player person here for this game, but I do like the way that they've structured teams from what I can see. You know, the fact that your teammates get a boost for a tech or civic when your one teammate finishes at that. I think it's cool. I think it's good. It's actually making it more than just, you know, declare an alliance and your kind of ad hoc teams like that.
Yeah, I agree. You know, one thing, and maybe this is overpowered, maybe not, because to counter playing on a team, I include AIs that are also on the team. So it's not just me and my friend versus each single AI. That wouldn't work out well. And obviously they fall very far behind in tech that way. But one thing I was kind of hoping, and it would make sense to me a little bit, is the suzerain with city-states. You don't really share anything like that, to my knowledge, which I was kind of disappointed. Maybe it would be OP. Tell me if I'm wrong, but I was kind of hoping that if my friend and I both devoted envoys to one city-state, we could win it over faster. And that's not the case. At first value or first thought, it seems like it would make sense because those are flat bonuses for the most part, right? Like, your city's going to get 4 more gold or whatever in your capital. But that doesn't happen that way. So I don't really know what to say. I think that there's room for improvement on it, but I definitely need to get in there and play around a lot more. I do, Dan, to your point about the victory types, think that that's very, very smart in making like one religion that you're pushing out over the world instead of like kind of competing internally.
Yeah.
I think it's also kind of a balancing mechanic that you don't stack up all those bonuses for every wonders. I presume, I haven't tried it myself, but I'm pretty certain that those wonder bonuses also don't extend to the other player. Mm. I think that is that thing. It requires you to strategize a little bit more with your teammate, literally play as a team to work towards different goals for each other. And don't make it super overpowered all of a sudden.
Yeah, I think you're right there. And, you know, I will say one thing about Civ 6 is, and this is obviously just a personal thing, this is not for everybody, but my friend and I are actually competing for less of the same wonders in this game, which I think goes back to that idea of leaning into a specific play style. In the previous games, in Civ 5, we would often compete for the exact same wonder. And how disappointing that is when your teammate takes it and you thought you were getting it, and then, you know, after your hours into a game, it kind of is like, I wanted that thing. I needed it.
Yeah.
But in this one, and I guess, you know, this is strictly for the two of us I'm speaking, but we're just having these different play styles. We're not competing against one another. He takes one wonder. I go after this one. It just has worked out a lot better. And again, not going to be for everyone across the board, but I think that's interesting. And I do think that's a result of the leaning into a specific style. So I hope that kind of continues. I really want to see more of it. Yeah, they're doing a good job, and I'm really happy that they're taking this feedback. This was feedback that was very, very much requested. The community kind of got to a roar, basically, when it went getting close to this. I mean, people were like, where is my multiplayer? Where are my mod tools? So I think it came at the exact right time to be like, okay, everyone, chill out. It's here. Just take it. Modding is next in our list here. I don't really know how much we want to talk about this, but They updated the lobby and in-game UI to better show additional content details, which is cool. That definitely helps you see which mods you're dealing with better. So that's less, just there's less fine-tuning, I feel. And there's no annoying load screen like you had in Civ 5. I remember when you wanted to launch a modded game, and I guess I could have said this at the beginning of Civ 6, really, but when in Civ 5 you would try and load a modded game, it would be like a 10 to 30 second wait just to process what mods are currently there. Now there's none of that. It is just seamless. There's no wait. There's just, meh, it's gone. So that's a very welcome thing on my end. Anything else you guys have on mods? I mean, I think that could be a conversation of its own for next week, but anyone have any burning notes on mods?
Nothing burning. I mean, I think that, like, for me, I'm just excited to use them. I think I've said this in the past that, like, the mods that I prefer to use tend to be more on the aesthetic side or the interface side. I know people, by the time Civ 5 was done, when I hopped on the mod workshop, I'd see the most random stuff, right? Like mods to make it like Azeroth from World of Warcraft, or mods to make it like a Game of Thrones world or something like that. And power to the people who enjoy that. That's not really my bag. But I do love, I think I saw Quill18 using a specific kind of mod in his most recent Poland game that looked like it just really simplified and made much more available the statistical resources of the other leaders and stuff. So I got to try and maybe see if I can find out what mod that is. But for me, it's all about mods that make statistics easier to track and just make the game, you know, prettier, more colorful. And I know that makes me sound superficial, but whatever.
I mean, it's an important part of the game.
Yeah.
If you don't like what you're looking at, then shame. Mm-hmm. Valter, anything from you before we move on to these wonderful balance changes?
Well, I think the most important part is the release of the software development kit, or the SDK. Mm-hmm. And I think that we are or interesting things quite soon, now that modders have their hands on that. It should make things a little bit easier.
And definitely with it solely being in the workshop as is, I think we're going to have way more exposure to the mods. I admit I was a very bad person for going out and searching the Civ Fanatics forum for something, so there may actually be mods for Civ 6 that I want and just don't know exist yet, and I'm very excited for that to become more prevalent. And I think you're right. I think those modding tools are really going to help enable people, if for nothing else, just in setting the precedent that now you're officially supported.
Mm.
Yeah, just enabling them is good enough.
Yeah.
100%. Yeah.
Okay, guys, this is the big part, and we got a lot to talk about here. So these are balance changes. I don't know how exactly we want to do this. Please give me a shout out if you find something that really sticks out to you. I'm kind of going to run through the first couple here, just and we can maybe recap after I do the first five or something like that. But first of all, starting position and map generation has been tuned. I feel like I felt that last night. They updated ice generation to allow more circumnavigation.
Thank God.
Totally saw that. Totally saw that.
Yeah.
Commercial hub. Like, oh, go ahead, Dan. You go.
No, sorry. I was just going to say, I had so many instances where, like, I would, because I love the naval game. And Kyle, I think you do too. We've talked about this. And I would try and, you know, I just send ships around to try and get them to explore and find different corners of the world. And they'd get caught up in these massive ice flows. And I felt like they were, you know, basically trying to cross freaking Greenland to get where they needed to go. There was so much ice and it was just so frustrating. I don't want to micromanage that. So I did love seeing this.
And I have to say, before I go on to the next one here, that in a way, it also, I was kind of sometimes having the opposite problem of you, Dan, where I was coming into games that had, for some reason, it just felt like the ice was not impeding me at all. And I felt like my ship could go everywhere. And that also feels a little fake too, right? Like my ship should have some hurdles, but it didn't. There were often games where I could just sail everywhere all the time because whatever. But last night I was in one and it felt like a very good balance. So I'm guessing that's a full tune where they made it so in maps that for some reason it wasn't prevalent, it's there now. And for maps that it was overdoing it, I bet they toned that back a bit.
Well, you know why I think I probably saw it more, Kyle, is because my go-to civ is Russia, right? And their start bias is in Tundra. So if I ever want to build a navy in Russia, I have about 3 tiles worth of usable water to do it in.
Good call.
The ice was getting in my way like every time.
So. Oh, that makes total sense. Now, this one kind of ties into it in a way because we're talking trade routes here and harbors. And I have to say, I'm a bit of a fan of this because I think I was screwing up my setup before, but commercial hub and harbor both provide +1 trade route capacity, but only the first one applies. This used to stack to +2 capacity total. Valter, I feel like I'm going to toss this one to you because you were the guy that was always telling me to prioritize commercial hubs. Totally a valid idea. But what that did when I started to prioritize that is I stopped prioritizing harbors. And only then did I remember that, wait, I could get +2 trade routes, you know, if I were doing the commercial and the harbor. Now, only the first one that you plop down gives you a trade route. The other one is void. Thoughts on that?
Yeah, this is definitely one of the parts of these changes, in my opinion. Huge, huge nerf to the harbor district itself. It's also now only text in the tech tree that is a standalone tech. It doesn't lead to anything. So all in all, the harbor became a lot less appealing build because that trade route capacity was one of the biggest reasons why I ever built it. Mm-hmm. And now the commercial hub is just instantly, more interesting to me than that harbor, because commercial hub itself gives, instead of the harbor, gives admiral points. Yeah. Great merchant points, which is better in my opinion.
Definitely.
And now you don't have to build both anymore. So I feel that harbors will be built a lot less, and only where you want to have that bonus for naval units building, for example.
Maybe. I think that, Kyle, if I can interject for a sec too. I did see a lot of people when I would go on Reddit and stuff who would post like little joke posts where they'd be talking about how they were exploiting harbors by building them in just basically little like 2-tile lakes in order to get the trade route. I don't know if you guys saw that or if you guys ever did that. I think you're kind of more honest players than that, but to me, this will definitely mitigate that kind of, I don't know whether you want to call it a cheat. Let's just call it an exploit.
I don't know if I can call myself more honest. I wouldn't do it either way because, you know, I would find that like an invalid way to do it. But I'll say that maybe I was just too dumb to do it because I never even thought of doing that before.
Oh,
dang
come
it.
On, Dan.
Dang it. All these times I could have been cheating the system. Maybe there's a silver lining to this, though. Maybe we see that harbors get something more interesting in the future, something a little bit more unique to them. Again, don't know what that is, but who knows what the expansions bring and all that jazz. But you know, they spend a lot of time rebalancing these things. I saw Ed Beach posted something like that on Twitter. Someone had asked, you know, why did it take so long to do X, Y, and Z? And he's like, well, now that we have this many districts in the game, it is not an easy feat to rebalance it. And I give them 100% credit. That is an accurate statement. So maybe we get something cooler in the future. Maybe something a little different that we haven't seen before. You never know. Mm-hmm. On that note, computer, thanks for going to my screensaver. Boo. On that same, let's see. Speaking water, units that are embarked now use an era-based strength value instead of their base combat value. Many of the techs that reveal strategic resources have been changed to reveal the resources before it is needed to build a resource-dependent unit. Those are okay.
That's good. Yeah. I think that last one there that you said is good because that'll allow for more advanced planning for when you're looking at, like, I don't know, oil or whatever, future resources.
It will show you if you can actually build some musketmen mm-hmm. before you have that part, because if you can't, you kind of want to do something else, I think.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I think that's good. And I kind of highlighted, I think I was the one that highlighted these next two. But this one reads big to me. Players can now build obsoleted units if they do not have access to the strategic resource required by the unit. So if you are trying to build a swordsman, but you don't have iron to do it, now you can build a warrior instead, basically, which is good because you would get locked into it. And if I can make a quick little throwback here to Rick from the CivCast Challenge when he wrote in about the Aztecs, kind of similar thing with him. He was saying, you know, His Eagle Warriors, as the Aztecs, have that ability to capture and make people into builders when they kill someone. But, you know, if you upgrade to, I believe it's the Swordsman again is the next tier, you know, you lose that. So this kind of goes into many possibly different strategies of how to play the game. If your Eagle Warrior, for example, is still keeping up with a bunch of Swordsmen or something like that, you know, maybe you want to keep pumping them out just so you can keep getting builders. So there's probably layered effects to this. Any, Valter, have any thoughts on that?
Interesting. You might want to indeed avoid iron if you want to keep those Eagle Warriors, but most importantly, you don't get stuck with, like, I don't want to research this deck. Give me a unit that I can't build, so it makes no sense for me to advance this way, which is really strange, because advancing itself should always be, and you shouldn't be held back by artificial goals, like, I don't have that resource, so I shouldn't advance. That's silly.
Yeah. Let's see, Dan, I'm going to toss this next one to you in a sec. Tech tree balance, adding several prerequisites to address paths through the tree that were too quick and led to era transitions too early. You and I have talked about this a bunch on the show before in saying, you know, sometimes I don't feel like I'm always getting to use a unit to its fullest. And, you know, before the show, we kind of talked about how they added some prerequisites. Is there, you know, do you think that's a good move there to kind of rebalance this tree?
Oh, for sure. I think that it makes sense. People would, you know, beelining is one thing, and beelining is a tried and true civilization method that we've been using for basically since tech trees were a thing. But I found that this game, you were able to beeline way too heavily in one direction. And I think that some of the, and it's really minor. I mean, I think that, you know, they really only affected, computers, steel, scientific theory, and industrialization and I guess horseback riding are the ones that really kind of got, you know, quote unquote nerfed. But these are central. If you look at each of these are texts that are not OP texts, but they're very powerful texts that you could too easily get to. They would only have one kind of minor prerequisite or one or two minor prerequisites that you could beeline to quite easily. So I think that this is a very smart idea on Firaxis' part of ensuring that people are staying within a realistic era, realistic era to where they are in the game and not able to say infantry in the year 1100, for instance.
Yeah, that makes sense. It really does. Like this, I'm a fan. I was noticing it last night for sure. We just talked about, you know, the archery. It's no longer a leaf tech, which seems important. You know, that's especially with how powerful that was. It seems to make sense now that it leads into other things. Due to how long we're going with this, I mean, this is a bulky amount of patch notes here. We're going to try and keep this moving along. So let's jump down here, guys, to AI tuning. They increase the desire and ability to use nukes and aircraft and maintain a standing army. General AI attack improvements. I'll tell you, I got really bulldozed by barbarians last night, and I'm thinking maybe this is just the general AI attack improvement note here. And I know also we're going to talk in a second about some barbarians having pillage abilities. But boy, I really got swarmed. And maybe it has to also do, there's another note in here, barbarians now rampage when their camp is destroyed. Even without their camp being destroyed in my last game, I had often about 3 to 4 barbarians in my city. And so did Gandhi was on the opposite team. He was next to me. He had that as well. We were just getting swarmed. This was almost like Raging Barbarians, that feature you could turn on and off in Civ 5. Valter, have you experienced any crazy new barbarian stuff?
I haven't many crazy barbarian stuff yet. But I am afraid of Gandhi now with the increased desire and ability to use nukes.
Did he really need increased desire? Come on now.
He was on border too, guys. I just took his city last night. What do you think he's going to do when he hits the atomic era?
Well, is it a patched game? Is this post-Australian summer patch?
Yes.
Well, then
yes.
He's going to nuke the crap out of you, Kyle. So that's what he's going to
do. Should we just abandon all of our cities?
Like a Christmas tree.
Oh, my God. Yeah.
Flee. Run for the hills.
Okay, Dan, I'm throwing this one at you because you like this note. Barbarians now pillage tiles to heal. What is up with that?
That's some BS, friends. That's ridiculous. Like, that's the last thing that you need. Barbarians are already aggro, and they are already... I get that. They add a level of difficulty that if they weren't there, the early game would be a breeze. Absolutely. Totally. But now the fact that they can pillage tiles to heal, I can count on. I can't count on two hands the amount of times that, you know, I barely was able to expel barbarians or kill barbarians from my city, and now the fact that they can pillage tiles to heal means that I think you have to prioritize some kind of military in the early game, no matter what game type or victory type you're pursuing. You have to have like two or three archers or warriors at all times to protect from these barbarians, because if you don't, it's going to be a nightmare.
Two
even
or
more
three.
So than before.
Talk yeah. about 3 to 6. Bah.
Yeah. Yeah,
I had such a hard time. But I would like to talk about this one note here, which says, increased desire to declare friendship. No. Because last night, every AI in the game was baseline annoyed with us to begin with. Not the hateful one. I'm drawing a blank on the specific name, but it was the... Yeah. What was that?
Denounced.
Yeah, it was that the orangish frowny face one where they're like, they wouldn't accept any of my envoys, nothing. I couldn't, you know, send delegations, I should say, that's the word. I don't know, they just didn't like us, and I did nothing to them. So something about that, but they also apparently tweaked the border warnings. So before, anytime you moved your troops next to an AI's border, they were already complaining at you that they were there. So they apparently reduced that frequency. And added a grace period of 2 turns after the end of open borders before the AI starts complaining that you're too close to their territory. So that's pretty standard here. Support units recognize that they are not under threat if they are share a hex with a friendly unit. That makes sense. Think that was maybe glitchy. Will now be more aware of gold income. That's the AI will now be more aware of gold income and will work to bring in more. So that's a good tuning. They tune strategic and luxury resource trading. Good. Let's see. The AI will now liberate minor cities and civs of current allies. So that's cool. I mean, these are some pretty basic things there that are all tuned up. We're kind of running slow here on time. Anything else for those ones, guys? I think that's self-explanatory.
Yeah, I think they just adjust parameters that make people quite happy, because that was a major complaint what you had, that everybody was always angry at them. Mm-hmm. And they tuned it a little bit, and in return we got a more powerful and desire to an ability to use nukes from it. So fair deal, I would say.
Yes. Let's see here. Okay, Dan, this is going to be, we're going to highlight you in this segment, because let's try and tie these two together a little bit. We've got the Australia DLC, and you're going to use Australia as our historical minute. So let's just do, do you actually want to read through this, Dan, and just give us a quick recap over like what Australia really brings to the table as their prime things, and then you can tell us a little bit more historically about them?
Let's talk about Australia, because I'm really stoked on them. And I know that, I know that first things first, I know that I read on Reddit that some people were upset that Australia was released so early on when you're absent, you know, cornerstone civs like the Mongols or the Persians or all these, you know, what you would call cornerstone civs for the game. And some people were saying that they're upset with that. And I could kind of understand what they're getting at. But frankly, I would rather see Firaxis experiment with a new and unique and really kind of flavorful civ, for lack of a better word, because I haven't had enough coffee this morning, like Australia, and then just give me, you know, the Mongols or the Persians or these ones that we're used to in the next expansion pack, right? Because we know that's what's going to happen.
Sure.
Right? We know that with DLC, they're going to give you kind of more flashy civs, so you spend the $6, and then when they release an expansion pack where they release 5 or 6 new civs for like $20, they're going to give you your cornerstone civs then. Mm-hmm. So relax, folks. I think they did a really good job with Australia, just like they did with Poland. So their civ unique ability, and I'll read it out and then I'll toss it to Voucher, see what he thinks of it. Australian coastal cities always receive extra housing. Pastures also trigger that vaunted culture bomb effect, grabbing adjacent tiles from other civs and city-states. Yields from campuses, commercial hubs, holy sites, and theater squares are enhanced in attractive terrain. What is this ability called? I don't have what the ability is actually called in front of me right now. Do we know what it's called?
No. Bad kind.
Land down under.
Thank you, Wouter. Land down. Oh, how appropriate, right? We come from the land down under. I like it. I think on the surface, it's pretty multifaceted. It would be super beneficial in kind of like a mid to late game. It was a culture bomb with the land seizure aspect of it, but also just maintaining what you have with your coastal cities that are inherent to your start bias. Wouter, what do you think of that ability?
It's amazing. It's really good. I like the increased yields from a beautiful tile. It's really, really powerful. And I already was settling some cities due to spacing limits. And if you manage to put a city on a coast and a river with Australia, then you have 10 housing available in your city. Really good.
Nice. Yeah. No, it's fantastic. Kyle, quick thoughts?
I echo what Wouter said. I think that I made some real missteps using that ability last night in my game. I noticed it kind of changed up the roles of where you put districts, because sometimes my commercial hub, instead of trying to put it where I might, like next to a harbor to get an adjacency bonus like that, it was really encouraging me to go elsewhere, because sometimes I was getting like +6 gold for, you know, just as a starting bonus for plopping down my commercial hub, which is crazy.
Nice. That is fantastic. It is really multifaceted. There's a lot of elements to it, 4 separate elements to it. So you really have to give, I feel like you really have to give them a couple games in order to get used to it. Mm-hmm. John Curtin's unique ability is called Citadel of Civilization. And I'm actually going to highlight that in my historical minute. Mm-hmm. But basically, Australia gets bonus production at the start of a defensive war and when it liberates a city. So this is very historically appropriate because John Curtin was the Prime Minister of Australia at the onset of World War II. So defensive war was what World War II was for Australia. And I just think it's great. I know that we all are familiar with the AI declaring war on us almost nonstop. So the fact that if you're Australia, now when they declare war on you, you get bonus production, means that you are going to be able to repel them, I think, quite quickly and quite handily. Wouter, would you agree?
Yeah, it's really powerful because the ability also triggers, I believe, at war with a civilization and a city state attacks you again. It renews that turn limit. So that makes it really, really powerful.
Nice.
I have to say, it is a huge help. Even if you just have a new city in a different area, a city that's not affected by the war, it helps there too, because they get the flat production boost. So, you know, when you're in those early days and you've only got a couple people in the city, production is low. I was pumping out granaries and stuff like that, like crazy. It was awesome.
That's fantastic.
You almost want to be provoking the AI to declare war on you.
Yeah, because absolutely. I think for once, AI declaring war on you is something that's going to cause you glee. You're going to be stoked.
Set up a nice defensive line, get some encampments there, like use some mountains, like encourage them to go through that pass and just farm XP off, taking them out. That'd be a good way to
do it. And build in the meantime.
Exactly. the unique unit for the Australians is aesthetically a very cool looking unit. And also a very powerful unit called the Digger, and I apologize in advance for this, Digger.
Oh, God,
I'm sorry. I knew it was a bad idea right after I did. much like the samurai for the Japanese, they get a combat strength bonus on coastal tiles, a +10 combat strength bonus on coastal tiles, and +5 combat strength outside Australian territory. They require the replaceable parts tech, and they replace infantry. So that's critical. The replacement of infantry, which is such a crucial mid to late game-ish unit, means that you are going to be pumping these out in virtually all circumstances. And frankly, for what I've seen in both Let's Plays and in the one game I had with them in it, they seem like super powerful units and they look really cool. Wouter?
Yeah, definitely. The fact that they get extra combat strength, neutral foreign territory, makes them really good for assaulting enemies as well. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of coastal tiles wherever you're going to play, even on a Pangaea. Mm-hmm. Combat strength, that's nothing to sneeze at.
Yeah.
No.
This next one, actually, I didn't get to the Digger, Dan, but this next one I'm excited for.
Oh, and you know what? The Outback Station, their unique building, is first of all beautiful. It looks great. So bravo to the art designers of Firaxis. This looks fantastic, as most of this stuff for Australia does, I should
definitely
know. With the Outback Station, yeah, it's a unique tile improvement that unlocks with guilds and can be upgraded with steam power and rapid deployment. It provides food and production with bonus food for adjacent pastures. So just a really super beneficial, it's not like an aggressive building or anything like that, but it's super beneficial for any of your at-home production or obviously the semi-crucial resource of food. I think it also, I'm just looking at its stats on the CivWikia right now. It ups the production too for adjacent Outback stations. Yeah. So you get plus one production and plus one food from every two adjacent Outback stations. So you really want to kind of like build a ton of these together, because that would appear to give you even more of a solid output than it would. Kyle, thoughts?
Yeah, I actually want to toss it to your aesthetic point there. If I hope I'm not mistaken, but it seemed to me when watching the videos and stuff, because my game is not to this point yet, I'm actually beelining to this right now, this tech, or the Civic, I should say. But I think from watching those videos, it starts out with like a full circular fence if it's just one hex. But correct me if I'm wrong, but I think if you have like three of them next to each other or something, that fence, they cut off the circular portion and they actually like it is all encapsulated.
Yeah.
Which is just cool. I mean, I like that. Hooray for interactive, you know, aesthetics. That's smart design.
Absolutely. Wouter?
Yeah, beyond the point that it is beautiful, it's pretty good. You can place them on a lot of tiles, also because they give housing just do. So yeah, it's a pretty good upgrade for a tile, and it only gets better with time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So the four kind of fundamental bonuses, I think fantastic for these guys. The unique units look great, and they're relatively strong. There is, of course, a scenario that came along with this. And actually, I was perusing Reddit before we started recording, and people seem to really like this scenario, the Outback Tycoon scenario. Just a basic 60-turn scenario in which you race to explore Australia, find its natural resources, and use them to enrich your colony. It's a competitive economic scenario with no combat that emphasizes exploration and territorial expansion. So that is a really neat and unique kind of sidebar, that there's no combat.
I would play this one.
Yeah, man.
I have something. Something about the economics of this game really, really catches me. I mean, that's what I was playing in the early days. I actually find I will play games where I'm heavily focused on just bringing in revenue and money. So this is cool. I want to try it and just feel a different type of game.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. And last but not least, Uluru is in the game. Uluru is in Civ 5. It is a famous Australian natural wonder, and it gives you bonus faith and culture to adjacent tiles. It is a desert wonder, and I haven't seen it, but I'm sure it looks great. I'm sure it looks great.
I think so, too. I'm sure it's going to look awesome. Dan, do you want to lead us right into that historical minute?
It'll be a really quick historical minute, because I know that we're sort of... John Curtin's unique kind of civilization, or unique leader ability, pardon me, is called Citadel of Civilization. And you may think to yourself, Citadel of Civilization, that's really kind of grandiose and a lot of bombast there. Where does that come from? Well, John Curtin, like I said, was the Prime Minister of Australia at the onset of World War II. And so when Pacific War broke out with Japan after the bombing of Pearl Harbor, John Curtin went on the radio to address the Australian nation. And the quote he gave was, you know, quite, it had a lot of conviction there, and it was quite inspiring. And his quote was, "Men and women of Australia, we are at war with Japan. This is the gravest hour of our history. We Australians have imperishable traditions. We shall maintain them. We shall vindicate them. We shall hold this country and keep it as a citadel for the British-speaking race and as a place where civilization will persist." So that's a very Churchillian kind of speech that he gave, clearly inspired by Winston Churchill. John Curtin just seems, from the little bit of research I've done on him this week, like a pretty strong and solid dude, and a really good prime minister for 4 years for the Australians. I do believe he died in office, which is kind of sad.
Yeah.
But yeah, he seems like a good leader. I know that people who had been advocates for an Australian civilization weren't really sure who they would use for a leader.
Mm-hmm.
And this guy seems like a pretty solid choice, and I like him, and I like the Civ altogether.
Yeah, I think it overall, it felt very well meshed together. I don't know if this had to do with the starting bias issue last night, but yeah, I was in what felt like kind of an outback area. I had this multiplayer map had abundant resources, but I was somewhere that had very, very few personally. I could see some in the distance, so future cities, but I don't know. I don't know if that's a bias for them that they are, you know, have less immediately, but I can really see how some of these bonuses are going to play in further when you get to later game, especially when you get guilds and all of that stuff. So I am a fan. Valtor, did you get a chance to play at all Australia?
Yeah, I had a couple of games as them already, and I really like them. They're perfectly good for my style of gameplay.
Good. Very good. Well, everyone, we managed to jam-pack an episode full of so much content this week. I do want to give shout-outs to people, though. Justin R., I have your message sitting here. Vegas QC tweeted us some info. We've got, who am I drawing a blank on? Matt Vogel, thank you for writing in as well. So we're going to tackle a bunch of these next week, which are going to be awesome. I'm going to throw this out to everyone that please, please, please write in. Tell us what you think of Australia, because as you know, Dan's hinted at it. That's coming to you next week is the CivCast Challenge. So roles will be there for you next week. But tell us what you think. Hopefully you can get in and play around with it for a bit. Write us an email. Tell us your thoughts on it. We'd love to hear it and highlight it on the show. As a reminder, you can get all the info for the show, including links to download it, all your CivCast challenge notes, and a form to send us some of these great emails at kyledempsterstudios.com/CivCast. We'll have all that information up there for you. We are on Twitter at Civ_cast. I'm over there at KyleDempster7. Dan is at DanTheMax. And Valtor, you are at Innocentius69, or?
Yes.
Okay, I could not remember if the 69 is at the end or not. Cool. So you have all those Twitter links. That's all in the show notes below. So if you're, you know, doing this on your podcast app, you should have all those nicely in your hand already, so you can find us there. Let's see what else would be good if you could do. Oh, if you could share this lovely show with your friends and let them know what we're over here chatting about. We've had so much kind words this week. So many compliments came in about the show. Seems like a lot of people were finding it, especially when, you know, these new updates come out and there's attention drawn to the game again. It really seems like we got some great new listeners. Also, shout out to our friends over at the Civilization Wikia. They were getting back in touch with me earlier. And our friend 01 over there had a child earlier in the year. So congratulations to you. He's getting back into the game now. So I hope everything is awesome. Guys, any last words from you?
No, I'm good. I think that I'm just really stoked to get back to the game and to I'm actually going to start right after this, right when I hang up with you gentlemen. I'm going to go start a game with Australia, probably on the islands map, maybe with six guys, and really have some fun with it, because I'm really stoked on this Civ. I think they did a good job with it.
Yeah. Valtor?
That's the best advice I can give you. Play more games.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Ooh, and one last thing. I did not mention this, but I feel like so many people know it. If you want to send us an email directly, that is civcastpodcast@gmail.com. Also, if you guys want to support the show, you can find us at patreon.com/civcast. We love all of our patrons there, and we're going to continue to work on making those tiers more and more exciting for you guys, especially now as we have a whole new person joining the show. This is going to be awesome for us. Very, very excited to see where we take CivCast in 2017. So everyone, you go and enjoy a game as Australia. Tell us your thoughts. And until next week, just one more turn. You're listening to the Kyle Dempster Studios Network. For more shows like this, visit kyledempsterstudios.com.